Welcome to Empowered, Mind-Body Inspiration. The mind is the map to wholeness, wellness, health. The heart is the key to genius and inspiration. Join me and my guests as we explore how to release and rewire into who you truly are, unique, whole, and empowered. Please like, share, and subscribe. Spiral up, spiral out. Welcome, everyone. Today, we have Dr. Jessica Liu, MD, and Nora Pope to talk about the sacred spiral into cycles and fertility. Nora Pope and Jessica Liu co-produced the 2021 accredited webinar, Chart Your Cycle, Progesterone HRT, and Fertility Optimization. Both Jessica and Nora are graduates of the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine. These ladies are passionate and well-versed on the art of empowering women and say they look forward to the day when all women attain body literacy. They believe there is a deep mind-body connection to fertility and that we have more awareness and ability to heal, and we can be more empowered than we are conditioned to believe. Let's see how this spirals out. Welcome, ladies. So good to have you here today.
I'm so excited to be here with you, Jane.
Thank you for having us, Jane.
So, girls, let's start with your personal stories, how you became so passionate about this subject, which is so empowering to women.
Yeah, I don't know. Where do I begin? I think I will say I was a hormonal nightmare from get-go. As soon as my hormones started to appear, terrible cystic acne, excruciating, painful periods, debilitating. And, you know, working with conventional medicine, I got the same story, whether it was speaking to a dermatologist or a gynecologist or an endocrinologist, they all had the same thing to say to me, which was, huh, that's interesting. You are like the 0.1% of people where you're not really responding to our therapies. You're actually getting the opposite than what we would expect. And so, you know, fast forward to naturopathic medical school at CCNM, when I started working with my clinician and through doing a deep dive into nutrition and actually treating my hormonal imbalances at the root, was when I started to see some changes. Like, I was growing hair in places nobody should really grow hair. And this all started from coming off the birth control pill. All of my hormones went into hyper, just haywire. And so it was really kind of working through that process that I was able to move that along. But growing up, I always had exposure to something that was different. You know, my dad was an engineer and he was into Chinese medicine, and he gave all up his engineering background to dive into that and become a TCM doctor. But I remember being a little girl and he would build all these weird contraptions because he was so afraid of EMF radiation and the dangers of EMF radiation to our cells and our tissues. He went around to protect the neighborhood, buried all these contraptions in all around the neighborhood to try to protect and neutralize that radiation. And, you know, at the age of 15, you're looking at your dad going, what in the, you know, what is he doing? This is so lame. But, you know, he was so much ahead of his time. And, oh, I have so many stories to share, but I'll let Nora jump in. But, you know, mind, body, and energy medicine is such an important part of healing. And I think something that we need to create more awareness and credibility for it. It's there. We just need to get people to start telling their stories more.
Exactly.
And I got interested. It was just a slow burn. I am a lifelong student of human nature. So I love new ideas, new concepts, being a detective, uncovering the truth. And I love, actually, there's a great article I've been quoting by the Harvard Business Review, what good listeners have. I like to listen, but not because I'm passive. I like to listen because I'm an active thinker. You can be a sponge where you're silent and you absorb, and then you squeeze out the sponge and you just repeat what you just heard, which is not what you want. You want to be a trampoline where you're listening and then you're bouncing off ideas and you're asking questions to elicit insight and learning. And I think what attracted me to fertility, that's what attracted me to naturopathic medicine. So that's number one. But what really attracted me to cycle charting was how fair it is. When you consider that men are fertile every day and women are not fertile every day, it'd be nice if they learned how, when a woman is fertile. And I believe what I see in my practice, which I practiced until 2019, I just saw couples become more close when they would learn about the extraordinary fertile days of women, because for men, it's not extraordinary, it's daily. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I get excited. And then also it's good medicine because the cycle chart becomes your roadmap to curing infertility.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So much good stuff there for sure. Yeah. And I think that shared experience nowadays with, you know, I have such a space in my heart to support couples as they're going through their own fertility journey that is often mired with high degree of emotional stress. You know, one out of every six couples dealing with infertility now in Canada, 50% of those couples, you know, have acquired the same criteria that will fit a PTSD diagnosis. So that is a problem. It's not being studied enough and it's not being talked about enough.
Yeah. So stay tuned. Dr. Jessica Liu, ND, is going to publish an article on PTSD, and I'm going to keep bugging her until she does. And then,
you know, and that's where cycle charting becomes a tool of empowerment and engagement and deep, meaningful connection between the two sides of a pair. And it's a shared experience and it's eco-friendly. It's free. It tunes you into your body. Like, you know, just can't say enough about it. And it's the starting point for a restorative fertility approach.
Yeah. So you empower people by learning how to empower themselves, but yeah, stress, like the stress alone is counteractive. So just to be aware of that and to be able to weave through that and help people do that must be really incredible.
I have a story of this one patient of mine and before she'd come to see me, she had already gone through four or five failed IVFs. And that is an incredible amount of stress to take on, not just emotionally, but physically. And she was on my table. We were doing some energetic work and acupuncture. And I could see she was so ungrounded. She was just, we call it Shen disturbance in Chinese medicine, right? She was just in her head. You could see the wheels churning. And I said to her, you know what? You're not here. You're already pre-planning your next IVF. You're already assuming that this one is going to fail. And she just stopped and she's like, you're right. I'm just assuming that this one's going to be like all the rest. And I'm just in my head thinking, what's the next step? Right. So just to get her to go back into her body took quite some time. And in the end, she did. You know, in the end, she made some really beautiful changes and worked around her stress, cut back her hours at work, and she made a baby. So
yeah,
huge, huge amount of healing that can be done there.
And our thoughts are so powerful that, you know, you need to adjust to believing that it will be positive, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So tell us about what you teach women in order to empower, and couples, in order to empower them, like cycle charting. We could start there. Mm-hmm. Does that sound like a good place to start?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when I was studying at the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine, in my first year in 1998, I was the only woman in the class. We were 125 students, so roughly 20 men and 105 women. I was the only woman in the class who knew when she was fertile and when she was not fertile. So there was very little knowledge about cycle charting as a wonderful, you know, explainer of what our bodies are doing. Thankfully, now we've seen an explosion and there's apps and there's all kinds of service providers. But I think what was missing in naturopathic circles was merging it all together and really harnessing traditional Chinese medicine, acupuncture, botanical medicine, seed cycling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you consider that all the textbooks out there, you know, just talk very vaguely and generally about a woman's cycle being 28 days, for instance, and even in traditional Chinese medicine textbooks, 28 days. And this is what drives, well, I shouldn't say it, but, you know, there's a knowledge gap. And so we want to fill that knowledge gap and just say and demystify the fact that unique fertility in every woman is not intimidating, and you can learn. And so we're getting away from the 28-day model. We want to really learn about your estrogen time in the first half of the cycle and your progesterone time in the second half of the cycle. And we're owning the term white flow makes babies. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we're very proud of, because white flow encompasses where we're all conceived. So, you know, the man's, you know, his seminal fluid will house, you know, his reproductive semen, right? Yeah. Sorry, I'm just blanking out. His seed, okay. And then a woman's ovary, it will house, you know, sort of ovarian fluid, follicular fluid. And when that ova is hatched from the ovary, it's bathed, the cumulus oophorus is bathed in fluid. The fallopian tube is bathed in fluid. And women make cervical fluid. And what all these have in common is it's very nutritious. They're rich in sugar, like fructose. They're rich in minerals like zinc and potassium. And this is where conception occurs, is in white flow and in this fluid. And so what that does is that it takes away the sort of ick factor of cervical mucus, and, you know, part of women's fertility. And it broadens the definition, saying we're born in water. We're conceived in water. Mm-hmm. And we want to get that out there, because that's the big macro message. And then the micro message is that it becomes a roadmap. So you want to do a transvaginal ultrasound on those days of white flow, because that shows the follicles growing, blood estrogen's going up. And the cervical crypts have their estrogen receptors being turned on, and they're producing that white flow. And you want to test your mid-luteal hormones 7 days after your peak estrogen day. And that's the vernacular that we want to introduce in medical textbooks, in the common language, so that people achieve body literacy. And I always want to shout out and say thank you to Laura Wurschler. She worked at Planned Parenthood, and she taught cycle charting. And she coins that term. So really, it goes beyond family planning. It's into the realm of literacy, education. And me, I geek out, because I like to be a lifelong learner. And so that's one of the, you know, goals that we have, is to change the culture.
And we're trying to make it very user-friendly, right? So in our model, we're you know, the overarching theme is that we want women to be able to celebrate and recognize month in and month out their healthy biomarkers. So Nora has tried to simplify it, and we talk about the rule of five. So your 5 days of red flow, bright red flow in Chinese medicine, that means that your hormones have been quite healthy and your lining has been healthy. And, you know, in Chinese medicine, it's that missing piece of, it's not just about the egg and the sperm. It's about where that, you know, that embryo is going to grow and thrive is in the womb, right? And so 5 days of healthy red flow, not tons of days of brown premenstrual brown bleeding, not many days of tail end brown bleeding, because that could indicate either some hormonal deficits or perhaps some sense of inflammation. And then we want the 5 days of that beautiful white flow, that slippery quality that is very sperm friendly. And it also tells us that your hormone levels are healthy enough to create within the follicle a healthy, beautiful milieu to, again, stimulate the growth and the health and the DNA preservation of that little baby egg. And then your 5 times 2 to 2.5 days of post-peak days. So after your peak estrogen day, we want at least 10 to 16, average 12 to 14 days of your dry days, indicating that progesterone is starting to climb and it's creating that benefit, that juiciness of the lining, right? And so these are the biomarkers that we're trying to achieve. We're not trying to force women into a 28-day box, because that could be not helpful for them, right? Only 13% of women in the world ovulate perfectly on day 14.
No, it's not 100%, really?
Right? So we want to get away from that and teach women how to recognize what their healthy physiological biomarkers are, which are very easy to figure out even without a blood test. Blood testing can help, but if you don't have a blood test and you just got to rely on your own observations, you can do it.
No, it's really wonderful, because It took me 6 months to learn because I was a bit slow. But in 3 months, what you begin to see are patterns and rhythms in your health. And you start reading, oh, okay, this is when I'm ovulating because I had that middle of the month pain and my white flow just ended. Okay, here, I'm expecting my next period because, okay, it's about 10, 11 days now since my peak. And so, you know, this is the pattern. Okay, so my period's going to end any day now. So yeah, I can go swimming without too much hassle. And you can start planning your life, but it's a visual representation of your health. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you women's health, and it's right there. And every day is different. And sadly, in the culture, we tend to sort of place higher value on certain days of the month, depending on what you want to do. Mm-hmm. So if you don't want to get pregnant and like, no way, I want to get pregnant, then those dry days have a higher value. Mm-hmm. And if I want a baby, I want a baby, I want a baby, I want a baby, then those fertile days have more value. Mm-hmm. And this is not healthy. And it's definitely not mind body. That's for sure. It's very deterministic. Mm-hmm. And you want to appreciate every day of the cycle. And it's a snapshot of being a woman. And basically, it's the diversity day in, day out. No 2 days are alike. And let's celebrate that. Mm-hmm. And there's some days when you're not fertile and some days when you are. And you learn the differentiation and then the mystery is gone. And, you know, and then it gets into the dominant culture. That's a big goal that we have.
Mm-hmm. And then it becomes a shared experience between mm-hmm. both sides of the couple, right? That yeah. they can both be equally invested, equally in fertile and non-fertile days. Right.
Yeah, I wrote an article a few years ago in NDNR, Naturopathic Doctors News and Reviews, and I talk about just sort of the lack of spirituality that can happen when you're dealing with forced infertility or forced fertility. And what I mean by that is that if you take a young couple, their teens or in their 20s, and they want to temporarily impose infertility with the pill, sometimes the woman can become a sex object because sex on demand is sort of the expectation because, hey, you're not going to get pregnant. So why, you know, I want it now kind of thing. And then fast forward 20 years later, when the couple's trying to get pregnant. So you're taking a sub-fertile couple and you want to impose temporary fertility. The man becomes a sex object. Mm-hmm. Honey, sex now, it's temperature now, now. And where's the love and where's the spirituality? And so when I used to tell my couples, please don't just choose days of fertility. Please have sex whenever you want, morning, noon, and night, but mm-hmm. please be spontaneous and please have the emotion and the love. So I have this funny story about mind body because I just wrote it down. I'm a little embarrassed, but I went to this retreat. I was like a relationship retreat. And this was, you know, gosh, in the 90s. And, you know, they lock you up in a room and for the whole weekend. And then you're beating on drums and singing and dancing and you're not getting much sleep. Anyway, to make a long story short, a lot of laughing, a lot of crying. And I got home and that day, like drip, all my white flow just fell out of my body. And I've never had that because I was laughing and crying so much.
Oh, I love that.
And so
oxytocin.
It's like, oh yeah. My God. And so it's a little graphic and I apologize to our viewers, but it just shows that when you're very in tune with your emotions, the body will say thank you. And so that's why it makes me sad when I see couples only having sex on days of fertility when they're trying to get pregnant. I'm thinking, you know, really, really? So anyway, but yeah. I had to encourage them otherwise.
It's actually often a prescription of mine as we're, you know, diving into cycle charting because, you know, you want to be able to differentiate between seminal fluid, arousal fluid, and your white flow, your cervical fluid that is indicating, you know, ovulation is about to happen, right? And so sometimes I'll say to the couple, your homework is to just play, to cuddle, to touch, to tickle each other, to look into each other's eyes, have a conversation, caress each other, tune into each other, ask each other what the other party needs, and take fertility, take baby making right off the table. Because in Chinese medicine, that spark of connection, conception can only happen when the heart and the womb are connected, or the hearts are connected between both parties of the couple. And that is extremely important. Right. So, you know, I advocate that spiritual spice connection and it's extremely important. It's often missed in the traditional conventional realm of fertility care.
Right. And just how beautiful the process is. Like you're bringing in a spiritual being and the heart has to be connected in that.
Right. Right.
Exactly. I love what you're teaching. And for women to be in touch, we're not machines, right?
Yeah.
And to be in touch with every day of this, of our cycle, it's such a beautiful thing.
And Lisa Hendricks and Jack, she's an amazing woman as well. She has the Fertility Friday podcast. So she coined the term the fifth vital sign. And it really is important that you have to recognize that, you know, it's survival first, right? So if your body is in fight or flight, if you're not sleeping, if you're not well nourished, your body's going to put a pause on ramping up those beautiful fertility hormones because it's extra energy. There's no runway for that, right? So I had recently had a patient, she's a pilot, very demanding job. Her brain has to be on. And our first primary goal, sorry about the puppies, our first goal was just to get her to sleep better because she was on shift work. And just by sleeping better, finally, for the very first time in her life, she started to detect white flow.
Wow.
Cervical flu, she never noticed it before. She didn't even know what it was.
And we all know melatonin can balance estrogen, which in turn can balance progesterone. Bada boom, bada bing.
Yeah.
So yes, so we want our sleep. So we connect the dots as naturopathic doctors. It's very exciting.
Yeah.
So just quickly tell us about melatonin.
Well, sure. Well, it's okay. It requires 90 minutes of sheer darkness for the pineal gland to start producing melatonin. And so ideally you want lights out at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. So it's kicking in
or at least two hours before your bedtime.
So right? then by midnight you have melatonin kicking in. And this in turn, in terms of the circadian rhythm, will balance out estrogen because estrogen can be too antagonistic to progesterone at certain times of the month. It's post peak. You want a good ratio of progesterone and estrogen working in concert to maintain the lining of the endometrium. How am I doing? How's that? You know what I'm doing? I'm pretending I'm the scarecrow in Wizard of the Oz. You know, when he gets his,
turns out, yeah,
when he gets
brain.
His, when he gets his degree. So I just find I love being a naturopathic doctor. I just love the interconnections. And the first teacher who taught me all this was Sat Dharam Kaur. And she taught me the importance of progesterone in terms of cancer balance and breast cancer prevention. And then I asked her about cycle charting and she wasn't really aware. And this was back in 1998. So we talked about that in terms of timing the progesterone and timing the dosage post-peak. And so for me, it's just been a continuum ever since. So
yeah, and melatonin, I think, is one of those key things that can enhance that follicular milieu, right? So it's highly concentrated in follicular fluid, can preserve progesterone in the luteal phase. And just, you know, 3 to 6 milligrams a day, if you're having trouble sleeping, if you're getting up to pee once or twice a night, mm-hmm. you actually might be melatonin deficient. And a lot of us are, you know, we're just not getting, you don't even need your skin can't even notice any of that light coming in. So if you don't have blackout blinds, if you've got your phone blinking on your bedside table, mm-hmm. your pineal gland is not getting the signaling it needs to produce adequate levels of melatonin. And that's a health thing, never mind fertility, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you suggest like a quality of melatonin?
I think it's all kind of the same. The difference might be if you were to look for something that is long acting for people who have trouble, you know, either keeping it in their system, they're metabolizing it out too quickly, or something that at least is very well absorbed, like a sublingual spray or a liposomal type of avenue, right?
Yeah. I know Life Choice has a really high quality melatonin.
Yeah.
So
I think quality does certainly matter when you're choosing supplements, especially as it comes down to supporting your hormones and follicular or sperm health. I think that's part of the reason why so many patients aren't just only going to accept a strictly conventional path, right? There's pros and cons with everything, but I think a complementary, you know, integrative approach is really the best way. And, you know, our mission is to help women restore their fertility, yes, with cycle charting so that we can inform our treatment strategies and time our treatment strategies properly, time acupuncture properly. But also, you know, there are couples in the world who need further investigation, further treatment that may or may not be more invasive. But there are women who have this sort of umbrella diagnosis of an unexplained infertility that really shouldn't be pushed down that path, right? Because we haven't done anything for them to restore their overall physiology. And that work needs to happen first, right?
Yeah. So could you just summarize for women, you know, say you have your period and then day one to day 14 and then the white flow, like where would you avoid getting pregnant? Where would you want to get pregnant? Where would you decide to restore progesterone? Like just lead us through that.
Yeah. So Jessica alluded to the rule of five earlier. So you're going to start, we'll start with day one. Cycle day one is the first day of your period. So in the charting world, that's considered a day of fertility. So if you want to avoid pregnancy, you don't have sex during your period because menstrual blood is alkaline and it has nutrients and that can keep sperm alive. And actually, Carole King wrote an autobiography and she got pregnant with her boyfriend at the time, Jerry Goffin. I love those two, by the way. And they got pregnant at 17 because she said, we had sex during my period and we thought that would be safe. But there we go. I shouldn't use that. We thought I wouldn't get pregnant that day, but they did. And they had a daughter. But what we teach is that when you're just learning, your period is considered a day of fertility. Because typically after your period ends, you're going to have 2-3 days of dry days. And that's when all the hormones are low. Progesterone is low, estrogen is low, LH is low, FSH should be normal. And you're dry. Your cervical fluid isn't producing any white flow. And that's considered a day of infertility. But if you have, sometimes you have a period and then the white flow can begin and the blood is concealing the white flow. So you don't know what's what. So that's why don't have sex during your period if you want to postpone pregnancy. And before ovulation, the dry days, you can have sex at the end of the day because your body is still acidic and will kill sperm in minutes and the sperm won't live. Your body's not sperm friendly at that time. And then white flow begins and it can start out as being something very sticky, like 1/4 inch. It'll stretch to 1/2 inch, which is tacky. It'll stretch to over an inch, which is stretchy, and it'll progress from cloudy to clear to more lubricative. And more lubrication means more sugar, and sugar can keep sperm alive. And then last day, it stops. That's called your peak day. And then you add 3 more days, peak plus 1, 2, and 3, because the cervix is still open, and you can still have residual fluid keeping your body quite alkaline. And so that's your fertility window. It's basically any white flow before ovulation plus peak plus 3. And that's why we're all born, because the woman's fertility window is not the same as the ova. The ova is only alive for 24 hours, but her fertility window is whenever her body can keep sperm alive, because sperm can live in white flow for up to 5 days. So if they're having sex on a white flow day, the sperm is going to travel up the vagina, up the cervix, up the uterus, and live in the fallopian tube and wait for the ova to travel down with the help of the fimbriae and the tubal folds. And so that's how you avoid pregnancy. And then peak plus 4, you're good to go. So we had this little Valentine's Day posting with candied hearts, and then it had peak plus 4 on it. Woohoo, making whoopee, you know, on Valentine's Day. So peak plus 4 onwards, those are days of infertility. You can have sex morning, noon, and night, and you won't get pregnant. But before ovulation, on the dry days, you only have sex at the end of the day. So that's sort of in terms of family planning. And in terms of biomarkers, those 5 days of red flow shows that you have balanced estrogen and progesterone in the previous cycle. The 5 days of white flow shows that you have a growing follicle, ideally to 2 centimeters. And then the abrupt end of that white flow shows that the rupture has occurred because LH has kicked in to soften the shell of the follicle to release the egg. And then that stable 5 times 2 or 5 times 3 number of days post-peak, it shows that you have a stable lining of the endometrium supported by the balance, the ratio of estrogen and progesterone. And that's how we merge all this. And then when you talk about seed cycling, people say, oh, day 1 to 14, you eat these seeds, omega-3s, and day 15 to 28, you eat these seeds. No. You eat those seeds until until peak plus 2. You know, and then peak plus 3, you want to see the surge in progesterone, and that's when you introduce the other seeds. And so there's weight of sort of a tuning in. Acupuncture, you don't want to do, implantation acupuncture on day 21. No. You want to do it on peak plus 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. You have a range there. You want to time the treatments, whether it's botanical, acupuncture, nutritional, in sync with the woman's cycle. And then she'll know, you get, okay, this is your white flow strategy. This is your red flow strategy. This is your ovulation strategy. This is your conception strategy. This is your implantation strategy. And it's no longer number days. It's events that she sees in real time by making wiping observations.
Right. So is the cycle a little bit different every month? And that's why it's important to really pay attention to what's happening.
You want to see those stable biomarkers. So a little bit of variation is still healthy and normal, but you want to see that anchor of 5 days of red flow, 5 days of white flow, and a post-peak phase that's, you know, not much variation, 10 to 15 days. You want to range, and you don't want to range more than 2 or 3 days. But when you start charting, these patterns emerge, and then you understand what's going on, and you can predict, you know, you can analyze in real time what you're observing. That's the key. It's a real time observation. It doesn't average out your days like an app does. It doesn't predict like an app does. It's real time observations, and you make a real time decision of what to do. Okay, I need my ultrasound today. Okay, I need my acupuncture today. Okay, I need this seed today. I need this herb today. And you're in charge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And so someone that wants to get pregnant, that's when you go to the ultrasound and like really try to see what's going on.
Yeah. Because ideally you want a follicle that has healthy growth, you know, about 2 centimeters. Mm-hmm. And then LH has something to work with. And then LH can rupture a good sized follicle. And then also your body's producing that white flow, because so sperm can stay alive for more than 1 day, more than 2 days. It can stay alive for several days. Mm-hmm. And so you have a bigger fertility window.
Right.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And you mentioned seeds. Very quickly, just explain that.
Okay. Well, seed cycling, you want to talk about it?
Yeah. So I don't know what the new sort of, maybe there's so many other seeds that you can put in, but growing up in school, we were taught ground flax seeds from cycle day 1 to 14, right? But now we're going to get away from that, right? Yeah. You want to enhance your omega-3. So pumpkin seeds, walnuts, ground flax seeds, chia seeds, you could do hemp hearts, right? Sort of to enhance that pre-follicular, pre-ovulatory, pre-peak time. And then let's say post-peak, you want to kind of switch it over to things that have more of a progesterogenic side to things, like sesame seeds or sunflower seeds. And that, so that's how, and they haven't, I think more research should be done, but there is actually some good research done on the use of ground flax seeds to regulate a woman's cycle length. So I think there's some good stuff there for sure. And it's through food, right? So anything that we can do through food, you know, people are sort of hesitant to take too many supplements, and I don't want to prescribe too many things because it can get overwhelming. So however we can empower our patients to do it with food, and food as medicine is great.
Yeah. And flax is quite powerful, and it's important to grind it.
Yes.
Fresh, right?
Because you want to release the oils and all the lignans, and it becomes a selective estrogen receptor modulator.
Yeah.
So it can enhance estrogen function during white flow, and actually it can gently balance estrogen function post peak. That's actually the only seed I would recommend you take every day.
Yeah.
But it's, so it has a, it has a lovely balancing effect.
Yep.
And it's, you know, it's, and it's good for your skin. I had really dry skin, like really, really dry, embarrassingly dry. And, I couldn't wear black clothes. So I couldn't be goth at night. I had to, you know, and after eating flax seeds in less than 90 days, I had no more dry skin. So it's like, for me, it's like a body lotion. So I eat them. I eat them at least 5 days a week.
Yeah, me too.
Ground flax.
Yes, right? In a smoothie, and day in, day out. I just put in the smoothie, because what else are you going to, you know? And so you take the seed, I keep them in the fridge, in the blender, real time grinding.
And eat it right after. So, and a tablespoon, is that?
I do 2 a day.
I think the study was on 2 tablespoons of ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's good for your poop. And we need to poop in order to have healthy bowel function, reduce inflammation, you know, and keep our hormones recycling. So that's important.
Yeah. I really love, you know, when we were in school, we read that the textbook of natural medicine by Michael Pizzorno, Michael Joe, Murray and Joe Pizzorno. Yeah. And so cool. I geeked out. I went to U of T and looked at the studies on vegetarian diets, for instance, or no, not even vegetarian, just vegetables. And they talk about poop and that women who eat more vegetables will excrete more estrogens. And they analyzed it. This was done in the 1940s when scientific research was so naturopathic. And so I feel very validated. There we go. Yeah. But yeah.
Now there's more and more studies on the relationship between like microbiome and yes. inflammatory conditions, right? So yes. even now we're looking at the relationship between dysbiosis. So if you've got lots of pathogenic bacteria in your gut and not very good bowel movements, your increased risk for things like endometriosis mm-hmm. is much higher.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Right. So it all ties together.
It really does.
It does.
And then I wanted to say with cycle charting, I think it's important as a woman to recognize that we are cyclical beings. And so from a spiritual work-life balance perspective, to honor all the parts of us, that there are pre-peak things that you maybe want to focus on and post-peak. So I know for me, as soon as my period is done, I feel like superwoman. I plan all my projects. I'm getting back on the horse with my exercise. I'm eating clean. I'm like nice to my kids. Everything's good. And then post-peak, when progesterone comes and the nervous system needs a little bit more of a softer yin approach. And that means protecting your sleep, doing more grounded meditation, more deep self-care, more introspection. Maybe you're not going to book too many things and be kinder to yourself. And that's important because if you can predict that cyclically, then you're not stressing about it. We're not beating ourselves up about it, right? Like this is to be expected and to be honored. And we're not doing that enough.
No, I love that. And not to think we have to do all of it in one day, right? Like exactly. allow it a cycle. Yes.
Yes. And I want to talk about libido because this is a really interesting part. Again, there's a bias. I think, where did I read this? Oh yeah. So apparently if you're very Darwinian, mm-hmm. a woman's libido is highest when she's fertile. Ha ha ha. And and that is incorrect, actually. That is incorrect. And this is how I walk through. And I tell this to all my clients. I say, you know, let's talk about libido. Some women are very aroused during their white flow, mm-hmm. you know, because they're fertile, the follicle's growing, they're ballsy, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. I said, that's cool. And then some women have a lot of libido when they're not fertile. Mm-hmm. And, you know, usually at the second half of the cycle, in some women, testosterone will start to rise because that can sort of help with the lining of the uterus start degrading, I believe. Don't quote me on that, but I think that's one of the reasons. So with the elevated testosterone, they'll have a higher libido. Mm-hmm. And then some women during their period have very high libido because for some women, the rise in progesterone makes them feel maybe they're not used to being, you know, cocooning or intuitive and mm-hmm. they feel restless mm-hmm. because the culture is saying otherwise. Mm-hmm. So they're not feeling familiar with progesterone. And so when the period comes and there's that release of estrogen and progesterone, they have a lot of very high libido. They feel that relief and they feel, mm-hmm. I guess, in a way more confident. And so mm-hmm. it's tied into confidence. But the point is, we're not bears. We're not cats and dogs. We're not orangutans. Female orangutans only want sex when they're fertile. But human females can have libido any day of the week and mm-hmm. or month. And I think that's an important message. And then I ask them, I say, if you don't have high libido during your white flow days, why do you think that is? And I try and be like a trampoline, explore, ask questions, listen, and try and gain insight into what's going on. And maybe there's some ambivalence about having babies. Mm-hmm. And then I like to say, I'll tell you something, you know, there are some babies that are brought into this world. The parents didn't want the baby, but they welcome the baby and they're so happy. Mm-hmm. And I've seen this, you know, the boyfriend knocks up his girlfriend, he's freaking out and oh my God, I'm not ready. And then the next week he's picking names. So, and he's thinking about buying sheets. I mean, it's just people are very complicated. And then I've seen other couples who are hyper prepared, so professional, and they're lousy parents because they're rigid and they have an external locus of control. And I feel sorry for the kid. And, you know, and so life is complicated and making babies is complicated. And so I always say in my room, in this clinic room, anything goes. anything goes. You can change your mind anytime, mm-hmm. and let's explore why. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that's one of the, that's where naturopathic doctors thrive. So a very exciting, you know, environment to work in. Yeah,
I do feel there's an opportunity through fertility work to explore the dynamics of a relationship, to bring together a more meaningful connection. And obviously right now in this day and age, what we're all going through globally, there is a lack of deep, deep connection, and we're craving that. We're social beings. And we need intimacy in our lives. And I think with fertility, that is such a, you know, it's such a nerve for a couple where there is lost intimacy. The man feels pressured, or, you know, the woman feels pressured, and there's familial pressure. And, you know, we need to just free them of that and just focus on their intimate connection more. Right. And so that cycle charting, that empowerment gives that control back to the couple. It can be shared. Oftentimes we'll say, okay, you as the woman, you're making your observations, you're checking your mucus, you're wiping. And then you're going to tell your partner at the end of the day, here, this is, I found fertile sign today, and he's going to chart it for her. Right. And then it's a shared, and I've seen it work beautifully with some men. They get really into it, and they're so proud to show the chart, and they're understanding the nuances of their partner's hormones. And I think that's lovely. That's a wonderful way to build connection and intimacy between the two of them.
Right. Yeah. And to be connected to it. And Nora, you said something really interesting. And it made me think, you know, there could be an unconscious resistance to even getting pregnant, right? Like you might want it more than anything in the world, but your unconscious mind had a difficult time when you were a child. And so there's actually a fear of getting pregnant that might come into play.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I see that too.
Definitely worth exploring. You gotta, mm-hmm. we leave no rock uncovered in this.
So you look into all of it. Yeah. So where should we go next? Progesterone?
Yeah, we could talk about progesterone. I want to actually, going along with intimacy, I want Nora to share the piece about the birth control pill.
Oh, yeah.
and the study that you found That's really good.
Yeah. So I was, before the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine, I was taking my pre-med sciences at U of T, and I was surrounded by a lot of smart cookies. And, you know, and the study came out, I think from Denmark, maybe not. But anyway, it was a study about women on the pill and women off the pill and how they choose a mate. And so, and then again, you know, the first year biology class, we're taking Darwin, everything's Darwin. And I'm gagging because it's so reductionist. But they're saying that genetic diversity is what you want in human reproduction. And so about 20 guys were asked to wear a white t-shirt throughout the weekend and sleep in it and so forth. And then various women were asked to smell the t-shirt and grade it from 1 to 10, which one they found more exciting and more attractive and just nice to smell. And the women not on the pill always chose men with greater genetic diversity. And then women on the pill chose men with less genetic diversity. And then what happens is that you get off the pill, and then you're no longer attracted to the guy you're dating because, oh, he's too much like me, and this incest is kind of creepy, and I don't want to marry my fourth cousin, you know? and so the pill, for some reason, would alter sort of receptors in the immune system to pick up on various molecules of diversity. And so I just find that so ironic, is that something that's sort of designed to have, you know, lots of sex, and well, it's lots of sex without reproduction. And so when you go off the pill, choose someone else, because if you're going to want to reproduce, it's going to be with someone else, because the one with the pill isn't the right guy for you. And I just find that culturally that has a profound influence on human bonding and relationships and intimacy, because sex without reproduction can really skewer how you choose a mate.
Yeah.
So it's, so I found that fascinating. Anyway, but 1997, when the study came out, everyone was laughing about it. Oh, that's so stupid. And I'm thinking, why is it stupid? There's no mind body medicine there. It's like, it's not stupid at all. Anyway, it's been since been replicated several times. And now I've seen an explosion in a desire to learn about cycle charting because hormonal contraception has all kinds of side effects. Mm-hmm. One of them being altered mate selection.
Yeah.
So, and we can, you know, the blood clots and the strokes and the death gets a lot of press.
Yeah.
But it's a bit of a, it's a headline, and it's, I don't want to grab just a headline. The pill will alter culture. And so, and we want to promote a culture of literacy, body literacy. And my biggest beef with the pill is that it promotes body illiteracy. Mm-hmm. And so I just I'm a big supporter of cycle charting for that reason.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other issue that the pill being introduced so early now to adolescents when they have issues with their period, you know, their periods are heavy, they have dysmenorrhea. The number one prescription is the birth control pill or some other type of hormone regulator. And that can interrupt that prime time in their body to lay down good bone matrix, to establish protection of ovarian reserve. You know, there's all kinds of consequences. And for me, my post-pill amenorrhea, you know, being on the pill just for really a couple of years induced PCOS for me. You know, and there's a criteria to say, you know, no, it's not a one size fits all. It has to be taken on a case by case basis. And there are some individuals where it's just not a good fit. You know, it's just not a good fit. So yeah, individualized medicine, naturopathic lens, cycle awareness, body literacy.
So important, let alone the confusion that could come, you know, if you didn't realize these things.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And the confusion that could come if you didn't realize these things, right?
Yeah. It's so true. Yeah. Right? And yeah, challenging for, you know, to not have a handle on this thing that happens every month, to be stressed about it, to not connect with it. I think that has to change, and it has to start with our youth, right? We should be teaching cycle literacy to grade sevens, right? So yeah. That's kind of our big goal one day, that it'll be like an embedded part of health.
Every school awareness. In the world, every yeah. school in the world will know.
And
well, we didn't know it.
Yeah.
No, I know.
And for cervical fluid to make its appearance in Wikipedia, because there's lots said about seminal fluid and
it's pages just, and pages, of course.
There's nothing said about cervical fluid or cervical crypts and. It's our you know, our inherited anatomy, and we need to celebrate that.
Totally.
Yeah.
So what's next? What is next exciting to talk about? Is progesterone important, just to be aware of?
Yeah, I think if you're interested in cycle charting, if you see spotting before your period, you know, we're not talking one day, but maybe 4 or 5 days, that can be a sign of low progesterone. And if you want to start a family, you may have challenges. You may have challenges maintaining a pregnancy. Also, if you have a limited number of white flow days, if you don't have the 5 white flow days, that indicates a smaller follicle. So with a smaller follicle, you have lower levels of estrogen. And as a result, the smaller follicle will be a smaller corpus luteum, and you'll have lower levels of progesterone. And so there's an interrelationship between estrogen time and progesterone time. And so progesterone is a reflection of estrogen in that sense. Mm-hmm. And so they, you know, you need both, but definitely progesterone is the one that's going to maintain a pregnancy.
Yeah. And we're talking about, if we're applying it as a treatment, we're talking about human identical progesterone, not a progesterone receptor analog, like a progestin. Very different. It's like apples to zebras. We want the one that your body already recognizes. And if you have a woman with irregular cycles, lots of spotting, breakthrough bleeding,
and you're suspecting a progesterone deficiency, then it, you know, it's really important then once she does get pregnant to continue to test progesterone levels, because it should climb during pregnancy. And we believe you can save a pregnancy with progesterone if it's applied correctly in the right amount of time. So they've done a couple of studies in the UK, you know, showing, you know, sort of lukewarm results, but, you know, we have issues with some of those studies because they didn't start early enough. Maybe they didn't use the right dose, and they certainly didn't treat for long enough either. But it did actually show some improvements, you know, some positive benefit to using progesterone to save pregnancies. So, you know, it's something that I regularly use in my practice where appropriate, and, you know, have had some threatened miscarriages averted because women were on progesterone.
Yeah. And how do they know or get the right kind of progesterone?
Yeah, that's something I think you have to know what you're doing. You have to work with a licensed bioidentical hormone prescriber, somebody who, you know, knows what ideal format to use, that's a clean product, and that you're working with a compounding pharmacy that is reputable and has lots of experience with that. So thankfully, I work with an amazing compounding pharmacy in Oakville, Origins Pharmacy, such an amazing team. And their product is so clean, and it's made from yams, and just great stuff. So I've been very happy with their product so far. And to be free to tweak the dose, like, this is individualized medicine, right? So it's not a cookie size, one size fits all. And I've had many patients just be given a standard dose at their fertility clinic, and sure enough, we do the blood work and it's not enough. So we've got to tweak it up a little bit and enhance it. And that's helped them keep their pregnancy.
Wow.
And I would love it if the scope of practice was expanded for naturopathic doctors all over North America. Because right now, naturopathic doctors in many jurisdictions can prescribe compounded progesterone from a compounding pharmacist. Mm-hmm. And these are very good suppositories. They're wonderful quality. But there are, you know, when we say bioidentical progesterone, we mean human identical. Mm-hmm. So you can make it from wild yams, from all kinds of, you know, different vegetable based or plant based. Mm-hmm. But you can also make it in a lab in a test tube. It can be synthetic. Mm-hmm. But the point is, the shape of the progesterone molecule in that capsule or suppository is the same shape that we have in our bodies. Mm-hmm. It's the human progesterone. Mm-hmm. And the convenience of a capsule is just desirable for some people. They don't like a suppository. They find it messy. And a capsule is cleaner, and it's quite ubiquitous because it's made by huge global big pharma. Nothing wrong with that, because, you know, they're doing it as a public service because there isn't any patent on it. But so it's high quality. And right now, naturopathic doctors in Ontario can't prescribe what we call oral micronized progesterone. And I really think it's a wonderful next step, because it's another alternative for the patients out there. But there's definitely a need to expand the scope, because naturopathic doctors are always interested in the minimum dose. And sadly, couples that are going through IVF are getting mega doses of certain of drugs, and that can be carcinogenic. There's very little research, of course. No one wants to do it, but there are cases of elevated rates of ovarian cancer in some women who've gone through IVF. And naturopathic doctors can prescribe, if they could prescribe 1/10, 1/20, 1/30, 1/50 of the dose, certain medication can gently restore fertility. And, you know, that should be in the scope. And we teach that in our course. We want to present the protocols. And there are a growing number of medical doctors who are aware of these protocols, the goal being not to hyper-stimulate the ovary, but to gently restore the ovary, gently restore women's health, and gently restore men's health. There are all kinds of drugs related to blood pressure, for instance, that can restore spermatogenesis, drugs that are related to the endorphin pathway, similar to the acupuncture pathway of restoring health in men and women. And so that would be wonderful. So I'm very proud of that section. It's part two of our section. We go into a lot of detail on gentle drugs. We want to plant ideas that there's other pathways in the body to restore health. And we talk about drug-herb interactions, because that's where I geek out. And I'm saying, and if you take this herb, and if you take this medication, this will enhance the efficacy of this pharmaceutical treatment, don't you know? And it's a lot of fun. So we enjoy teaching it. We laugh a lot. And And so we're very proud. And we have quite a few hundred students now across North America. I think we have up to 242, something like that.
Yeah.
So we're very happy. And pharmacists are taking our course, medical doctors, physiotherapists, registered dietitians. But our number one goal is to teach every naturopathic doctor, because we love naturopathic doctors. So they're the majority of our audience.
And it's to teach mindful prescribing, right?
Yes.
It's to teach being tuned in, and, you know, being a good clinician means you're listening deeply and you're using your naturopathic tools, both verbal and nonverbal, to tease out, you know, what your patient is really saying and what the symptoms mean behind the scenes. What's the deeper meaning, right? And always to think about that mind-body connection. I do believe that that needs to be really somehow shifted in the conventional world. Where, you know, they're only presenting, it's funny there, it's like there's an agenda to show that stress doesn't have any impact on fertility, which I think is just bananas. I mean, that's reproduction for any animal out there, that under stress, it's not of physiological benefit to put that stress on the mom, right? So I think just, you know, being conscientious and open and really tuning in to feel like what, you know, I've had so many, you know, fertility patients come through my doors in the past 15 years. I don't take any liberties with anybody's health. Everybody is with fresh eyes and I'm listening deeply. Mm-hmm. And it's that care that patients are craving. It's that meaningful connection, right? So if you do nothing with your patients and just listen and hold them in that space of healing and positive regard, that healing can begin, even if all they're doing is feeling heard.
Yeah. Well, you know, even listening to you guys and how you're talking about the beauty of the cycle, and, you know, and you can feel yourself tuning into your own inner power and your own cycle. And it just, like it just talking to you makes you tune into your womb almost, you know?
Yeah, it's
incredible. So I feel like there's two audiences that might want to get in touch with you. There's the, you know, person that wants to learn as and become more aware and more educated. And then there's the healthcare professional that might also want to take your course. So can you tell people in both how to get hold of you?
Yeah.
So the our website is www.fertilityce.com. And the course that we present is accredited for 6 credits, including pharmacology in some jurisdictions and including obstetrics and childbirthing in other jurisdictions. And we have that. It's a wonderful recording. We hired a studio because we wanted good broadcast quality, good sound, good picture quality. Mm-hmm. And then you write an open book quiz. It's very friendly. And then we get you a CE certificate once you've completed the quiz. And then we have a lot of resources out there, but there are wonderful teachers who can teach cycle charting. So Dr. Jessica Liu teaches her patients actually cycle charting, but you can also learn them from fertility care practitioners. Mm-hmm. So there's the Fertility Care Centers of America. If you're mm-hmm. in the United States, if you're mm-hmm. in Canada, there's Fertility Care Canada mm-hmm. run by Maria Bezecki. Mm-hmm. And basically, they'll teach you about cycle charting. Yeah. And then there's also people like Lisa Hendrickson-Jacks who teaches Justice Method. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot out there. And mm-hmm. between Justice and Fertility Care Centers of America, I think you're in very good hands. Mm-hmm. And then there are these restorative doctors, and we're really plugged into this growing restorative reproductive medicine community. And these are doctors and surgeons, naturopathic doctors, nurses, midwives, pharmacists who are really interested in restoring fertility. And we've been networking some of our students who took the course. They want to hook up with a doctor or pharmacist. We've been introducing them because we have a North American wide network, and that's sort of part of the culture that we want to build. So
yeah, more people to help the world mm-hmm. make beautiful children that are healthy and vibrant, right? And Nora, she's at, what are you, nora.pope on social media?
Yeah, so I have too many handles, but on Instagram, I'm nora.pope. On Facebook, I am Nora Pope FCE, because our company is called Fertility Continuing Education. Mm-hmm. And then on Twitter, I'm Dr. Nora Pope, ND, because I haven't changed my handle yet. Sorry. And then and I forget what I am on LinkedIn, but you can find me, Nora Pope, FCP, Fertility Care Practitioner.
And then so. I'm easy. I'm just at The Fertility ND, and feel free to check in and connect. I like more meaningful one-on-one connections. I'm quite an introvert, actually. So to post on social media is takes a lot of my yin energy, I find. So I post when it's meaningful and when I feel called to it. So feel free to connect. I love that one-on-one connection.
Well, what we'll do is put all those links in the description so people can find you very easily and find what they need very easily. Thank Is there you, anything Jane. You'd like to add or anything you'd like to leave our listeners with? A final?
I always like to leave with a message of hope, right? So hope and gratitude and honoring the inner wisdom of your body will never go wrong. So just trust your inner knowing. So, you know, if there's something that feels off, or if you feel pulled to a particular herb or a particular food, just trust your body, because it, no matter how geeky or brilliant your healthcare provider is, like, you are still, you own that, and you're the expert of your own physiology. So remember that you call the shots and it's your journey. So.
And my final words are four words. One, two, three. White flow makes babies. White flow makes babies. And we want to get that message out.
And it is a beautiful message.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Jane.
So much fun. Thank you.
Thank you so much, ladies. That was really informative and incredibly powerful.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
Couple power and couple power, right?
White flow power.
And for everyone out there, don't forget, don't give away your power to anyone else. Be the creator of your own life. Spiral up, spiral out. Yes.